Now, we started yesterday the Mishnah on Daf Yud Amud Beis, and we got up to the bottom of the Amud. And let's just review the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. The issue that they're addressing is a person who, for whatever reason, did not fulfill his mitzvah bedikas chametz on time, which is Leil Yudalit. What are his other options? We might call them, what are the fallback positions or possibilities? So everybody agrees that he could do the bedika biyudalit shachris the next morning, Erev Chag. Now, everybody agrees that if he misses that second date, you know, here in Israel they call it Moadim, actually, they use that word for exams. There's Moed Aleph and Moed Bet. You know, if you miss the first Moed, they give you a makeup date, you know, that you can come. So everybody agrees that Moed Bet, in a fallback position, is the morning of the 14th. We can go even a step further. Let's say he misses the morning of the 14th. So he still could do his bedika b'shas habir. That's the Gemara, the Mishnah's language. Shas habir means right before midday, noon on the 14th, which is the time for bir chametz. What happens beyond that if he missed that deadline as well? So he missed the second moed, he missed the third moed. Can we make it up even beyond midday? And here we have a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham. Rabbi Yehuda says absolutely not. Why? You're already entering into the time period which is called Shas Iser Chametz. The Torah says you're not allowed to eat chametz from midday and on. And therefore, you are excluded from bedikah. And the Gemara is going to explain why. Chachom say no. On the contrary, if it's the Shas Issa, you really have to get rid of your chametz. And therefore we have to encourage you in this dire straits, in this fallback situation, to do the bedikah. Now, here we have Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says that the Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim applies to this period of time from midday until nightfall. Whereas, according to Tosfos, the Chachamim are not only adding the possibility of post-midday, meaning from midday to nightfall, but they're also adding the entire balance of the Chag, if you didn't make it in Bedikah, and moreover, and here's the punchline, even the Achar HaMoed. And Tosfos says, well, what's the purpose and what's the goal of Bedikas Chometz after the Moed? What are you going to gain from that? So Tosfos says, because that Chometz is chametz of our olav haPesach, and it's mixed up with your new chametz that you purchased, or let's say you bought it back for the guy, whatever it is, and you have to separate the two, and therefore you have to be bodek, check the house, find all the chametz that you had in your possession over the course of the chag, and you know that you're not allowed to eat that chametz. Tosfos says the following. I know, says Tosfos, exactly why Rashi couldn't accept my pshat. It's one of those rare occasions where Tosfos understands Rashi, even though he argues with Rashi. He says, Rashi's hands are tied. He, Rashi, could not possibly tolerate the idea of a bedikas chametz after Chag. Why? Because Rashi writes at the beginning of Masechet Pesachim that the purpose and goal of bedikas chametz is kedesh lo yavar olav v'bal yirah b'yimotzei. Now there is no Bal Yerah Bal Yimotzei on Chametz She'avol Lav HaPesach. Tosfos L'shitaso holds at the beginning of Masechet Pesachim that the goal and the purpose of the enterprise of Bedikah is Kedesh Lo Yochal, that he shouldn't eat the Chametz. And therefore even in Chametz She'avol Lav HaPesach, which is not subject to Bal Yerah Bal Yimotzei, but since there's an Iser, a prohibition against eating it, therefore we have to do the Bedikah. However, what remains unanswered is the following question. Why doesn't Rashi allow for Bedikah during the Chag? Nehi, I understand very well, after the Chag, there's no Ba'yirah Ba'yimotze. And therefore, there's no Bedika, because Rashi holds that Bedika is to prevent you from violating Ba'yirah Ba'yimotze. So that I can understand very well. Rashi had to make sure that there was no possibility in anyone's mind that there would be Bedika after Pesach, Liachar Moed, because there's no Ba'yirah Ba'yimotze after the Moed. But what about Bedika during the Moed? After all, every single moment that passes by, he's in violation of the losase of Bal Yiroa and Bal Yimotzeh for possessing chametz. He should certainly be bodik his chametz to try to find all the chametz and get rid of it. That remains an unanswered question. Now, on a technical level, meaning in terms of linguistics, we understand that Rashi's hands are tied linguistically. Why? Because if you read the Mishnah, the Chachamim say in the Mishnah, Yivdok b'soch ha-moed, and then Yivdok li'achar ha-moed if need be. So we're in a bind over here, because our ultimate goal is to make sure that li'achar ha-moed could not possibly mean literally after the moed, because Rashi can't tolerate the idea of b'dikah li'achar ha-moed insofar as there's no bayiro bayimotze. So there's like a backwards chagadi over here. We're going to have to reinterpret li'achar ha-moed in such a way that li'achar ha-moed means something that has bal yiroa ba'yimotzeh, a time period where you're not allowed to possess the chametz. So how do you get to that goal? So Rashi says the only way of justifying li'achar ha-moed would be to explain that betoch ha-moed means exactly what Rabbi Yehuda said as Shas Habir. Rashi, okay, just again, this is a mathematical calculation. Either you follow me, you know, I wouldn't make a big deal about it, but this is what occurred to me, you know, last night when I was reviewing this Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says that the latest time for Bedika is B'Shas Habir, which means midday on the 14th. The only way that Rashi could achieve his goal and explain the Chachamim in such a way that there's no Bedika Li'achar Moed, which would have been the literal translation, is by assuming that when the Chachamim say B'Tocha Moed, right, if he didn't do it in the morning, he should be Bodek B'Tocha Moed, that B'Tocha Moed means at the time of Shas Habir. Oh, so then B'Tocha Moed is the same for the Chachamim as it is for Rabbi Yehuda, just using two different terminologies, but they mean identically the same thing. So Shas Habir means 12 noon, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the Chachamim, when they formulate that halach of Shas Habir, they change the language and they use the language B'toch HaMoed. B'meila, if B'toch HaMoed means Shas Habir, then the Chiddush of the Chachamim is Li'achar HaMoed. Li'achar means after Shas Habir. After Shas Habir means from 12 noon and on. But you cannot explain that B'toch HaMoed means on Yontif, because if B'toch HaMoed means on Yontif, then Li'achar HaMoed means after Yontif. So Rashi's hands are tied linguistically, not conceptually. And therefore there's no way that Rashi could understand that B'toch HaMoed means on Yontif, because then Li'achar HaMoed would be after Yontif, and there's no such thing as B'dikah Li'achar HaMoed. Therefore, we have to reinterpret both the phrase B'toch HaMoed and as well the phrase of Li'achar HaMoed in such a way that there is no B'dikah Li'achar HaMoed. So what could that mean? And the answer must be, because otherwise it doesn't click mathematically, that B'toch HaMoed means midday, which is exactly identical with Rabbi Yehuda's B'Shas Habir, and that's at 12 noon. Okay, so at this point there's no machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. We have three possibilities, three times for Bedika. Number one is Arli Yudalid, the night time. Number two, Shachris in the morning. Number three is B'Shas Habir, or as the Chachamim enunciated, B'Toch HaMoed, which means midday. Comes along the Chachamim, and here's where they disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, that if you didn't achieve your Bedika on that third opportunity, the third possibility, namely B'Shas Habir, then you have something called the Achar HaMoed, which means the period of time after Shas Habir, from 12 noon until nightfall. But that's only on a linguistic level. We can justify why Rashi's hands are tied, and he must understand that that Toch HaMoed means Shas Habir, Li'achar HaMoed means the next period of time, but we don't understand why in fact the Chachamim would not insist on a bedikah during the chag? That we don't know. Now, what is the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chacham? So the Gemara says three lines up from the bottom, Hacha b'hacha miflagi. Mar sovra makami isuri in basar isuri lo. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the latest time for bedikah is before the Shas HaIsur, when up until, but not beyond the time that you're prohibited from eating chametz. So the last moment that you're allowed to eat chametz is 12 noon. Again, when I say 12 noon, I mean on a perfect day. And therefore, at that moment in time, Rabbi Yehuda could not possibly tolerate bedikah. Why not? Says the Gemara, Gzera dilma asi lemechal minei. While you're doing the bedikah, you might be tempted, inadvertently, forget yourself, and you might eat the chametz. And the Torah says that after midday, you're not allowed to eat the chametz. So there's no way we can allow you to involve yourself in bedikah. This is a gzera, the Rabban of Rabban and Savri. The Chacham disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda. Lo gazrina. We're not afraid that you'll eat the chametz toch kidei while you're involved in bedikah. And therefore, if we're not afraid of that, then go ahead and do the bedikah. Why not? So now Rabbo say to summarize, because this is really the segue into our sugya for today, we have a fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim. Can we allow you to be osek in chametz, you know, to get your hands dirty with chametz, at a time period when it's also to eat the chametz? Rabbi Yehuda is not happy with that, because Rabbi Yehuda thinks that once you're involved with chametz, you might come to eat the chametz. So Rabbanan are not afraid of that. And now the Gemara is going to try to prove just the opposite. That as a matter of, let's say if we investigate universal halacha shas, we're going to find the exact opposite. The Rabbi Yehuda is much more laid back. He's not worried about, you know, getting involved in something and touching it, handling it, that you might come to eat it, because you know it's asur. And the Chacham are the ones who paradoxically hold that we have to worry about the possibility that he might come to eat it. And that's based on a Mishnah in Masechet Menachos. Now the Mishnah that we're about to learn, which is the last line on Daf Yud Amud Beis, is the first of two Mishnayos that we're going to study today. And they're two contiguous Mishnayos. So this is what we call the Mishnah Rishona, the first Mishnah, because sequentially it appears first in the order of the Mishnayos in Menachos. And the subject of this Mishnah is what's called Chadash, what's called Omer. What I mean to say is the following. The Torah says that you're not allowed to eat from the new crop until the 16th of Nisan, when they brought the Omer. The Omer has to be Rishis, it has to be the first, and only after the Omer does everything become Yashan. Until that point, everything is called Chadash. It's the new crop. However, the Mishnah records a very interesting phenomenon. On the very day that the Omer was brought, the 16th of Nisan, the marketplace was flooded with Jews who were selling kemach v'koli. Now, kemach means flour, and koli means where they used to take the grains and dry them in the oven. Something similar to our cereals, if you will. Now, how did they get to the marketplace to sell their wares, sell their goods, a minute after they brought the Omer? You need what's called ktsira. You got to go out there and you have to cut down the grains. Then you're going to need to sift them in a sieve, S-I-E-V-E. If I spell that correctly, that's called a napa. And then after you sift it, then you remove the chaff and so forth and so on. Then you could grind it, which is called tchina, and make it into flour. So there was an entire process that went on. When did that take place? The answer is it took place before Pesach. But if it took place before Pesach, you're handling goods, you're handling produce that is asur midoraisa to eat mitzad the isur chadash. Why aren't we afraid that maybe he's going to pop something in his mouth? Tanan, the Mishnah says, Mishakarev haomer, on the very day that they brought the Omer, the 16th of Nisan, Yotzim, you go out to the marketplace, Umotzim, and what do you find in the marketplace? Shuki Yerushalayim, the marketplace of Yerushalayim, hey, Malayim Kemach Vakoli. The Mishnah tells you, no problem. What do you mean no problem? Did they do it with the okay of the Chachamim? Did they ask the rabbis to allow them to do this? To already prepare all this food which is Chadash before the Omer was brought? You know, you see Jews doing something, it doesn't mean that's allowed. You know, sometimes they did it on their own and they didn't ask for the license. So that's what we turn here to Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Shelo beratzon chachamim em osim. The chachamim were not happy with this. Why not? Says Rashi. The ikal amigzar, we should be afraid. Dilma perhaps. Kivas aske be. While they're involved in all these processes of cutting down the grains and what's the word I want to use? Not manufacturing. What's the word? Preparing? What? No, but I mean, what's the general word that would include from the time that you cut something down until it's edible? The whole...
process.
Processing? We'll call it processing? Okay, for lack of a better word. So during this entire period of processing, then, ikol amigzar, we should be very afraid. Dilma kimis askebo, when they're involved in this whole processing process, osi they'll come lemechel minei to eat from the food, and therefore the chachamim were not happy about this. They felt that the Jews were jumping the gun. Obviously, the Jews wanted to be able to sell their produce immediately. You know, there hasn't been good, fresh, new crop on the market, and now's the first opportune moment. And then the Mishnah records that that's only the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Biratzon chachamim ayu osin." Rabbi Yehuda says that they had the okay from the chachamim, and the Gemara explains, "V'lo kagaz Rabbi Yehuda dilma asi lemechal minei." And Rabbi Yehuda was not inhibited, and he did not enact any sort of a fence around the Torah. He was not worried about the possibility that they might come to eat it. Let's rely on the good Jews. They realize that they're dealing with chadash, and you're not allowed to eat this chadash, and therefore they would naturally prevent themselves or inhibit themselves from eating from the field. Now we have two questions to ask. Question number one, Rabbi Yehuda seems to contradict himself. With regard to the possibility of bedikas chometz after Shas Isuro, he says, no, we're not going to allow bedika then because dilma asi lemichle b'nei, we're afraid he might eat from the chometz as he's checking his house. With regard to doing this entire processing and preparing the kemach, the flour, we're not afraid. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have a gezeira. What's the difference? And in the chachamim shita, because Rabbi Meir here represents the Chachamim, we have the exact opposite question. The Chachamim are not at all concerned. They're laid back about Chometz, Bedikas Chometz, and they allow for Bedikas Chometz after Shas Isuro. That's true even according to Rashi's Pshat, because we're talking from midday until nightfall. And that's when Chometz is also Bachilo. The Rabbanan are not afraid. Let him do his Bedik, he's not going to come to eat it. But in the case of Chadash, the Chachamim, again represented here by Rabbi Meir, are very nervous that if we're going to allow this to go on, and they're going through the entire processing before the Omer is brought, oh no, they might come to eat Chadash. David, did you want to say? Now here we have a Girsa question. Is it Rava or Rabba? This is very common. I'm going to assume it's Rabba, even though in the text itself it says Rava. Omar Rabba. Rabba is going to try to explain that there's no contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is going to have a gzeira in Chometz, but not in Chadash. Shiny Chadash. Chadash is different because we're going to limit the permissibility. Lo hitarta lo ela al yidei kituf. We're not going to allow him to use a sickle and cut down chadash, when it's still chadash, from the fields in the normal way you do it, with a sickle, which is called ktsira. Instead of ktsira, we're going to do something called kituf. Kituf means to pluck it out of the ground, to literally with your hands pull it out of the ground. And therefore, since mitoch, that we're not going to allow him to cut down the grains, who's zachur? He will remember that he's dealing with something that's awesome because we made him do it in a very strange way. You know, it's very ineffective to cut things down by plucking them with your hands. It's going to take five times the amount of time that you normally would take it with a sickle. Amar li Abaye, wait a second. Tanach, that's okay, b'shas k'tifa. As far as the first stage in this whole processing, the first process, which means to cut it down from the ground, you're right. There we have a clear-cut shinu. A shinu means he does it in a strange way. He plucks it by hand. But tchina v'akada ma'ikol amem. Now, wait a second. There's a whole series of pu'ulos, of actions in this processing, because we're talking in the Mishnah about kemach. Kemach is flour. In order to produce flour, you need tchina, you need to grind it. And you need hakada, which means to get rid of all the impurities, the chaff and the pebbles or whatever is mixed in, because that's the way it is. Ma'ikal Meimar. Why isn't Rabbi Yehuda concerned in that case, when he's not doing any shinui, that maybe he might come to eat chadash, just like he's concerned in chametz, that when he's involved in bedika, he might come to eat the chametz. So the Gemara now strengthens the position of Rabbah by expanding it, and says, holo kasha. We're going to make a shinui not only in the first stage, when he removes it from the ground and he has to do it by hand, but even in the second and third stages, which is tchina and arkada, we're going to also require a shinui. Tchina berechaya diyadeh, with a hand mill. In other words, normally when you grind something, you put it in a mill. Here, instead, he's going to use this little hand mill. Again, it's going to be a fraction of, you know, of what he normally does. He's going to really make a radical shinui. And harkada al gav napa. The napa is the sifting machine. And what he's going to have to do is al gav. He's going to have to turn it upside down. Again, it's going to be a very primitive kind of sifting. But in doing so, by forcing him and requiring that he turn it upside down, he again has this memory device. He realizes that he's doing it in this primitive way, b'shinui, in order to remind him that chas v'shalom, he's not allowed to eat this because this is chadash. That's as far as the first Mishnah is concerned, the Mishnah of Mishakarev HaOmer, Yotzin, etc., Hashvakim, and that's it. So basically, Rabosai, I wouldn't say halfway through this, because again, we're gonna soon see that even with regard to Rabbi Yehuda, although we've managed to reconcile Rabbi Yehuda as far as this first Mishnah is concerned, but we're gonna have another Mishnah, and this is gonna be much more complicated. We're gonna have to drop the ball on Rabba and this whole system of shinui. But when I say we're halfway through, because we haven't yet gotten to address the issue of chachamim, you know, how do we justify that chachamim in the case of bedikas chametz are not worried, but in the case of chadash they are worried, and they do have the gzera. But we're not up to that yet. First, we're still trying to navigate through the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, because there's a second Mishnah in Menachos. It's literally the next Mishnah in Menachos. It says Elohad is not, but what are we going to do with the following Mishnah? Kotzrin Beis Hashlochim. How does he pronounce it?
In kibbutz we say Shalchim.
Shalchim. Kotzrin Beis Hashalchim. Visheba Amokim. Okay, let's go through this one after the other. Doc, I didn't know you were a kibbutznik. How long did you spend on kibbutz? Years and years?
One year.
You don't live on kibbutz now, do you?
No.
You're talking in your youth, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still a young man, but I mean, you know, a year ago. Were you in Bnei Akiva?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Which kibbutz did you go to?
It was at Ein Surim.
Ein Surim, okay. I spent some good time on Sa'ad, if you ever heard of it, down in the south. Until I got stuck in this turkey coop, and all of a sudden, 1,000 turkeys are looking at me. And I ran out of there. I was just so afraid of the turkeys. Anyway, so what happens in this Mishnah? The Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yehuda. That's what the Gemara establishes in Menachos. And the Mishnah allows you to do Ksiras HaOmer, meaning, I'm sorry, not Ksiras HaOmer, but I mean to say Ksiras Chadosh, in these two types of fields. And Rashi's going to work overtime here. It's a very, very long Rashi, and also Tosfos at the beginning of this Amud, to try to understand why the Mishnah allows you to do this Ksira. Now let me try to explain. When we talk about Chadosh, there are two different prohibitions, two tracks over here with regard to the Isur Chadosh. Classic Chadosh, when we relate to Chadosh, is Achila, is the Isur Achila. But there's another Isur in Chadosh, and that's Ktsira. Because the Torah calls the Omer Reishis Ktsirchem, which means it's got to be the first Ktsira from the new crop, which prohibits us to do any other Ktsira and cut down and harvest the crop from the new crop before we kotzer the Omer. So again, the Omer is going to accomplish two goals. Number one, the Havas HaKrovas Omer is going to allow us to do Ktsira on the new crop to cut it down. And number two, the Omer is going to be Matir, what's called Achila, and then everything becomes Yashan, we're allowed to eat everything. This Mishnah explicitly addresses Ktsira and gives us a green light, a certain heter, to cut down crops, brand new crops, before the Omer was cut down. But implicitly, this Mishnah is going to tell us something also about Achila. So we're going to learn this Mishnah on two levels. First, we're going to learn it on what I call the Pshat level, what's explicit in the Mishnah, and that's the issue of Ktsira. And we're going to try to answer the question, why in these particular two cases does the Mishnah allow you to do a Ktsira on the new crop before you've cut down the Omer? And then the Gemara is going to try to be medayek and draw a conclusion about Achil, which is really our sugya. But let's learn the Mishnah unto itself. Why is it that in the cases of Beis HaShlochim and Beis HaMokim, we're going to allow you to do Ktsira on the new produce without waiting until the Ktsira Sa'omer has been achieved? And that's the subject of this very long Rashi. Rashi says the following. First of all, Beis HaShlochim means an irrigated field. There's not enough rain that will allow naturally for the growth in this field. So we have to use methods of irrigation. Okay, that's just translating the phrase. Number two, we have something called Beis HaMokim. Beis HaMokim means this is a field that's located in a valley between mountains. And that's not the perfect place to grow field, to grow produce, because it's not ample rain coming down into the Emek. Okay, no offense to the street that we're sitting on today, but an Emek is not the best place to plant. It's what you'd call second-rate produce, and that's going to have an impact on the quality of the produce, because the more rain that falls down, the better the quality of the produce. Oh, Vitaima. So what is the reason that in these two types of second-rate fields or second-rate produce we're allowed to do the Ktsira and cut them down even before the Omer? Mefaresh Hasam. The Gemara there in Menachos explains. And here Rashi gives you a summary of the Sugya in Menachos. The Sugya in Menachos posits a luchor, an apparent contradiction between two verses in the Torah. Kasuv Echad Omer, one verse says, Uktsartem es Ktsira, Vehevesem, which means that you're allowed to cut down your produce and then you're going to bring the Omer. Alma, we see from this pasuk, Mutal Liktsar Kodem Leomer, that the Torah is saying that we give you permission to do the Ktsira, to harvest your fruit, your field, your produce. But Kasuv Echad Omer, the other pasuk says, Omer Reishis Ktsirchem, that you're not allowed to cut down the produce before you brought the Omer, because the Omer itself has to be Reishis. What does Reishis mean? the first. So the Omer has to be the first. If you're going to cut it down before you cut down the Omer, then you've undermined the mitzvah of Reishis Ktzirchem with regard to the Omer. That the Omer has to be the first harvesting before you harvest anything else. HaKetzad. So Gemara wants to know, how do we reconcile these two psukim? One of which indicates that you're allowed to cut the produce down before the Omer was cut down, and the other says that you're not allowed to do so because you're undermining the mitzvah of Reishis Ktzirchem, that the Omer has to be the first. And the answer is the following. Again, if you have the license of writing or making lines in your Gemara, this is what you want to underline. Mimakom shata mevi Omer, iata kotzer kodem lo. If you look at this produce, and this produce can, or is, shall I say, an excellent candidate for the Omer, then you're not allowed to cut it down. Because what we're going to do is we're going to compare the Omer to fields and produce which are roi to the Omer. They are fit for the Omer. Now you have this field and this field. The Omer is going to be brought from here. Don't cut down this, because this could have been the Omer. It's all in one group, and therefore you're not. But Makom She'iata may be Omer. But there are other fields which are not candidates for the bringing of the Omer, because they're of a secondary quality. Is they not to kotzer? That's when the Torah says you're allowed to cut it down. In other words, the competition with the Omer is only from a field that's a candidate field for the Omer. Utnan beperikol karbonos. He quotes another Mishnah. Ein mevim solis lemincha lo mibeis hazvolim velo beis hashlochim velo mibeis hamokim. That we don't bring a mincha, right? And the Omer is called a mincha. It's called a certain type of karmon from these places. And why not? Because the produce that grows in these places, in these kinds of fields, is second rate. And if it's second rate, you don't bring it on the Mizbeach. It's called Ein Mevi'in Solis L'Mincha Lomi Beis Hashlochim V'Lomi Beis Hamokim. These are places which, because of their unique location and the relationship to the rain coming down from Shemayim, will only produce a second rate produce. And a second rate produce is not to be brought on the Mizbeach. So therefore, in these particular fields, there's no potential, there's no candidacy for the Omer. And we said before, when the Torah prohibits you from cutting down the new crop before the Omer was cut down, that's because this crop is competition to the Omer. Because you're saying that, I could have brought the Omer from this crop, and I decided to cut it down, even though it's not going to be the Omer. That's an insult that undermines the kiyum, the mitzvah of Reishis Ktzirchem. But if you have a field that's growing produce, and that produce is not in the parsha of Omer, it doesn't present a candidacy because it's Eino Min HaMuvchar, then the Torah allows you to cut it down. And that, according to Rashi, is the point of this Mishnah. Now, again, we're not yet ready for the punchline of this sugya. We're just talking now about the Mishnah itself, as if we were learning Masechta Menachos, and we're trying to justify why in these cases of Beis HaShlochim and Amokim, you're allowed to cut down the produce even before you cut down the Omer. Tosis is a little bit unhappy here. Why? Because after quoting Rashi, in the first line and a half, Pirish Rashi mimakum she'iata mevi ata kotzer. If you're not going to bring the Omer from that field, then you're allowed to cut down that produce in that field even before the Omer was cut down. Tosis asks the following question: Afal gav detanya beperikol karbonos. There's a brisa in Menachos that says the following: Im hevi, what happens if he went ahead and he brought the Omer from these inferior quality produce, from these fields called Beis HaShlochim or Beis HaMokim? Kosher. In other words, although, if all things are equal, l'chatchila, the ideal situation, we will not bring the Omer and cut it down from these fields, but if you did so, b'dieved, post facto, then it's kosher. And the answer is, but kevan delechatchila lo yavi. If all things were equal, he should not have brought the omer from these fields. Is therefore chashvinale, we will classify it as makom she'iato mevi. It's a place where you don't, again, if you did the mitzvah in its proper way, you would not bring the omer from these fields. And once you classify it as such, then the isa, the prohibition of ktsira, doesn't apply. It's suspended.
I'm not sure I understand the difference between Tosfot and Rashi.
There's no difference between Tosfot and Rashi. At this point, Tosfot is just defending Rashi against a possible contradiction to Rashi. Tosfot says, V'afal Gavi, you'll contradict Rashi, because the Braisa establishes that you can, in fact, fulfill the mitzvah of Omer from these second-rate fields. But the answer is, says Tosfot, that's not a contradiction to Rashi. Why? Because when we talk about, when the Torah addresses the case of Makom Shatamevi or Makom She'iatamevi, the Torah is addressing the Lechatchila, the ideal situation. And these fields, Lechatchila, are not candidates for the Omer because they're of an inferior quality. And now the remaining, the balance of this Tosfos is to teach you something that goes beyond our sugya. And this is kind of rare that Tosfos, you know, wants to, you know, it's a pedagogic Tosfos. Tosfos wants to set you straight. He's like imagining a group of students, and he's wondering what bothers the mind of the students, and he comes to enlighten them. The Eilit Moa, you know, you're sitting in the audience, and you just can't understand this. Mi ika midi de midaraisa l'chatchila asu b'dievet shari. What means the following, and then we'll translate it literally. This distinction between lechatchila and b'dieved only applies to rabbinic law. The rabbis will tell you how to do something in the perfect way. And if you didn't do so, okay, you're not in lechatchila mode, you're in a fallback b'dieved mode. But on the Torah level, we never find a distinction between lechatchila and b'dieved. The Torah tells you, how do you fulfill the mitzvah? Again, you can go beyond and embellish the mitzvah. That's called zekeli miamveu. That's either mitzvah. But as far as the etzem guf kashrus ha-mitzvah, it's either she's pregnant or she's not pregnant. There's no midway over here. There's no such thing as lechatchila b'dieved. For example, there's a mitzvah called chalitza. That's the flip side of what mitzvah? Yibum. Now, the Mishnah in Yevamos dedicates an entire perek to mitzvahs chalitza. How do you fulfill this mitzvah of chalitza? There's no lechatchila b'dieved. The Mishnah just, you know, the Mishnah is there, and that perek just want to address the issue of what is a valid chalitza, what's not a valid chalitza. What do I care if you do it this way or that way? You know, if the na'al of chalitza is perfectly black or it's not black, just tell me what's good for chalitza. I'm not gonna rack my brains and say, well, what's the ideal way of... So this whole distinction here with regard to the mitzvah of the Omer, oh, take the Omer for this superior quality field, but b'dieved, if you took it from this field, you're also Yotze, from the Beis HaShlochim. What sense does that make? You're dealing with the mitzvah d'oraisa, you know, the Rabbanon will make distinctions between lechatchila and b'dieved. The Tosfos answers that kodshim is different. There's one area. I wish Ben was here today because he loves kodshim. Okay. So there's one area of halacha which is very unique, and that's kodshim. And here in kodshim, the Torah distinguishes between lechatchila and b'dieved. How do you fulfill the mitzvah of kodshim? There's the best way, the ideal way, and then there's the fallback position, because kodshim has two dimensions to it. Number one, it's a mitzvah, and number two, it's also a hechsher, or what we call a mechaper. It has an impact. And if it's a mechaper, you don't bring a second korban. You're not allowed to bring a second korban, because you already achieved your kapara. So therefore, you're right. As far as the mechaper is concerned, as far as the accomplishment, or shall we say, you know, the repercussions of the korban is concerned, then there's no difference between lechatchila and b'dieved. Just tell me the bottom line. Do I have to bring another korban, or I was yotze? Is it kosher, or is it not kosher? Okay, I'm going to have to shut this off. Sorry, I'm going to have to shut this off. However, there's another dimension to kodshim. It's not only an issue of whether or not I fulfilled my responsibility, I brought the carbon, I achieved my kapar, do I have to bring a second one? There's another dimension. And that is the mitzvah of the carbon. I'm coming close to Hashem. Here we have a definite rule when it comes to kodshim. It goes like this. Ika mili tuva de be'inan she yishane hakosiv olav li'akev. And that means the following. That sometimes the Torah will tell you that this is the way you bring the kodshim. And then sometimes the Torah tells you twice and it repeats itself. That's called Shina HaKosim. If the Torah tells you twice, then it means Li'akev. Then it's telling you that the karbon, if you don't fulfill that requirement, is completely possible and it's invalid. You're going to have to bring a substitute replacement karbon. But sometimes the Torah and Kodesh will just say it once. And if it says it once, it's just telling you the best way of fulfilling the mitzvah. Avoid this. Do it this way. But as far as Li'akev is concerned, whether you were Yotze, whether you fulfilled your basic chiyuv and you achieved your kapara, if it only says it once, then it's not Ma'akev. It's only telling you the dimension of the mitzvah. What? So in the case of Omer, the Torah only says once that you should bring it from the best field. The Torah never repeated that. So therefore you could be Yotze even if you brought the Omer from an inferior quality field. But if you want to know L'chatchila, what's the best way of fulfilling the Omer, then the Torah says bring it from the high quality field, the high quality Tvua. And therefore Tosis goes back to his original position that since in the case of Beis HaShlochim or Amakim, you're not going to produce the high quality, therefore, as far as we're concerned, it's not a candidate for the mitzvah of the Omer, and therefore there's no prohibition in the Ktsira. All that, my friends, has to do with the Mishnah Menachos. But that's not our subject. Our subject is Achila. As we said before, Chadash is a double problem. The Ktsira, the cutting it down before the Omer is cut down, and number two, the Achila. As far as the Achila is concerned, even the produce of Beis HaShlochim and Beis HaMakim is included in the Isra Achila. It's Chadash, because you haven't yet brought the Omer. How then could Rabbi Yehuda, the author of that Mishnah, this is the second Mishnah in the consecutive Mishnah, how could he permit you to cut down the Omer, I'm sorry, to cut down the Chadash, the produce, and he's not worried that you might put it into your mouth? After all, Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of chametz, did not allow you to be osek in chametz through the bedikah because you might put it in the mouth. Why not apply the same thing in the case of chadash and beis hashlochim and beis hamakim?
Could it be that by chametz we do that all year long? We're used to doing it. In this case, this happens once a year. This process, so we're not used to eating this.
Excellent. Okay, so we're going to get to that in just a minute. That's going to be Abaye's breakthrough. Right. But right now, the Gemara wants to see if we can defend Rabba. Rabba says that the reason why Rabbi Yehuda is lenient is because you're doing with the Shinui. In this case of Beis HaShlochim, you're not doing it with the Shinui. You're allowed to take a sickle and cut down the produce of the Beis HaShlochim without any change, without any switching around. You know, we're not going to tell you to do a ktifa. You remember that there are two words, and you have to distinguish between them. One is called ktsira, which means taking a sickle and harvesting, and another is called kituf. Kituf means that you pluck it by hand. Here, the mission allows you to do a straightforward ktsira without any shinui. How could that be? Now, there's another part to this mission that says, avalo gochim. Gochim means to pile up a massive amount of tvua, of grains. That we're not allow you to do. And Tosus is going to have a whole discussion here in the second Tosus, what's the difference between Ktsira and Gedisha. But in any event, let's focus on Ktsira. The Gemara asks, Ukimna, the Gemara there, Menacha says that the author of that Mishnah is Kerab Yehuda. How would the Mishnah allow you to cut down the produce before the Omer is brought when that produce is Chadash. And Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that when you're dealing with Chadash in a normal way, like in this case Ketzira, we have to be worried, we have to institute a Gezerah and not allow you to do so because you might be tempted inadvertently to put it in your mouth. And therefore at this point, the Gemara rejects Rabbah. Rabbah, who said that you did it in an unusual way, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda was lenient, would only make sense as far as the first of these two Mishnahs, what we call the Mishnah Rishona, because the Mishnah Rishona, the Mishnah just tells you that there were people out there in the Shuk, and they were selling their wares, their kemach and their koli, immediately after the Omer was there. Meaning that, but how did they get that? What was the processing? Says Rabbah with the Shinui. But now in the second Mishnah, we're talking about Kotzrim. I understand why Ketzira is allowed on a Doraisa level, because it's Makom Shiyata Mevi Misham. But on the other hand, what about the Chashash, the fear that he might eat it according to Rabbi Yehuda? How could Rabbi Yehuda allow that Ketzira? And at this point, the Gemara takes Rabbah and throws him overboard. Ella says, Abai, no, we have to come up with a whole different explanation as to why Rabbi Yehuda would distinguish between Chametz and Chadash. In Chametz, he's very nervous, and he's worried about the possibility of Achila. In Chadash, he's not worried about it. And here's where Abai comes up, David, with your theory. Again, Abai worked very hard, because he wasn't as bright as you, David. But he finally figured out what you had in mind thousands of years ago. Omer Abaye, Chadash, Badil Mineh, he's separated from it. Chametz, on the other hand, Lo Badil Mineh, he's not separated from it. Let's take a look at Rashi. Now again, in my Gemara, I don't know if it's, this is probably not true for your edition, but there's something on the right side called Hagos Habach. And if you go straight across there, you'll see the Rashi that I'm referring to. The Dibra Maskil is Chadash, Mivdal Bedili Mineh. Now, if you don't have that Hagos Habach, what I would hope you're able to count up from the wide lines going up into the skinny lines. You're going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up. Do we have the Rashi? Derabanan Adrab. I'm sorry, I skipped it. We're going to go a little bit earlier. So, how many lines did I tell you? I forgot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I said it was 8. You have to add another 3. 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 lines up in the skinny line. Chadash Mivdal Bedili Mineh. We're not afraid about Chadash that he'll pop it into his mouth. Why? Sharei Lo Hurgalu Li Ochlo Kol Hashana. He's not used to eating Chadash the whole year round. The whole year round, he abstains from Chadash. How many people can raise their hand and say they fit that description? Nobody?
Bleed-headed.
Okay, bleed-headed. Right, because there are those poskim who say that there's no problem of Chadash in our time. In my humble opinion, that's a very weak leg to stand on. But that's not for a discussion for now. What I would tell you is to get the Chadash guide. I just heard recently that Rabbi Herman, the author of the Chadash guide, for years and years passed away. It's very sad. And basically the guide to Chadash in America, at least, is a very intensive piece of research and tells you how to read the labels on the boxes so that you know it's Yosh and it's from the previous crop. Now, Chadash is not a problem all over the world. It's a particularly acute problem in America because there are two planting seasons in America. You know, the Midwest is a very large agricultural area that's very rich, and they have what's called spring wheat, and they have winter wheat, and winter wheat is all Yashan, but spring wheat is Chadash, usually from, I would say, November, December, and on, up until Pesach, that's all Chadash. And the Rambam writes, Kol ha'ochel kezayis Chadash, b'chol makom, u'b'chol zman, ha'reza lokim min ha'Torah. That's a quote from the Rambam. See, you don't want 39 lashes for every single kezayis of Chadash. B'chol makom u'b'chol zman. Okay, they found the sheet of, I don't remember, the Rav Yoh, some sort of far-flung Rishon that you and I never heard of, who says that Chadash doesn't apply in our time. In any event, Rashi's talking about a case where everybody agrees there's an Isur Chadash. They say about the Shagas Aryeh, who lived about 150, 200 years ago, that he used to carry around Europe, wherever he went in Europe, he had his own utensils. Because he's afraid to use your utensils because you eat Chadash and he doesn't. Anyway, Sharelo hurgulu li ochlo kol hashana. The whole year round, he doesn't eat chadash. It's therefore ein limudim. It's not natural for him lifshot yado to extend his arm lahoshit lifiyem and to eat it. Aval chametz limudim ein bechol hashana. You eat chametz the whole year round. Now, mind you, this Rashi disproves the following thesis. It cannot be that lo b'dilimine means that two things look exactly identical, and therefore you may confuse them. That makes no sense, because in the case of Chadash, there's no difference between Chadash and Yashan. Yeah, some people think Yashan is old and it's stale. That's Baba Maisa. Yashan and Chadash are exactly identical. And why do you call it b'dilimine? The answer is that Rashi holds it's a chefta di surah the whole year round. Because up until Pesach, all chadash is asur, and we don't eat chadash. But chametz is not a cheftzid surah the whole year round. It's heter gomer the whole year round. Now in Basa B'cholov, you can wave it back and forth. I mean, the meat itself you can eat the whole year round. The milk itself you can drink the whole year, but you can't eat the combination thereof. A cheeseburger is asur the whole year round. So we're going to have to say that we don't find these gzeros with regard to basa b'cholov. You have to get rid of all the basa b'cholov you have, because you might come to eat it, because you don't eat basa b'cholov the whole year round. But if luyitzu had something that you would eat or drink the whole year round, like for example, yayin to a nazir. A nazir became a nazir for 30 days. Let's assume. I'm not talking about a nazir old. So that wine, the whole year round, he's allowed to drink. If that be the case, that should be like chametz, should be lo b'dilimine. The same wine that he drinks the whole year round, all of a sudden became asur. So it's not really a cheftzid isur, it's only for the 30-day period. So in any event, when you have a time-bound isur, that becomes lo b'dilimine inshim, because the whole year round you'll have to eat it. You know, you might ask me about Yom Kippur. Maybe on Yom Kippur I should clean out my entire fridge, because I might come to eat it. I don't know. Again, the logic here is lo b'dilimine inshim, the same thing I ate yesterday on Erev. On Erev Yom Kippur, I'm going to eat tonight on Motzi Yom Kippur.
No, but there's a difference between Isur Gavra and Isur Gufa. That the Chametz is forbidden for everyone on Pesach, and the other examples, like food on Yom Kippur or wine for the Nazir, is only Isur Gavra.
No, you see, in the case of the wine, I agree with you, because everyone except for the Nazir is allowed to drink the wine. In the case of Yom Kippur, no one else is allowed to drink the wine. I'm not going to force the Nazir to get rid of his yayin. He can invite his buddy to have a good glass of wine. But in the case of Yom Kippur, no one's allowed to eat. And therefore it becomes like Chametz on Pesach, where no one's allowed to eat, and it's a time-bound, time-limited Isur. Maybe we should say lo b'dilimine inchi. So what are you going to answer? That it's not a Chetzid Isurah, and therefore we don't want to get rid of it, whereas chametz is a cheftzid isur. Maybe you're right. You know, we're not nervous about, inhibited about getting rid of chametz, because even after Pesach, you're not allowed to eat that chametz. It becomes chametz shavu of Pesach. So we're going to have to assume that you need two conditions to be met in order to have these gzeros. Number one, you're going to have an Isa which is mutter the whole year round. But number two, you're going to have an Isa that's inherent in the Cheftza. It's a Cheftza of the Isur, and it's Asur for everybody. Aval Chametz lemudim heim b'chol b'kach kol hashana. Chametz I eat the whole year round, and it's only Asur for 7 days, and that's called lo b'dilimine inshi. Tosis at the very beginning of Masechta Pesachim quotes this Gemara of Abaye in order to justify why we need Bedikas Chametz and we don't find Bedika with regard to any other Isur. We don't have to get rid of Bas Mecholov or Klaya Kerem or Arla. I mean, all these things are us, but no, we should tell you to get rid of it. You don't have to get rid of it. Why? Because it's Bedilim and Ayinshi. Arla and Klai Kerem and Bas Pechov is also the whole year round. But Chametz is Mutta the whole year round. That's called Lo Bedilim and Ayinshi. And therefore, we have to get rid of it. So now Rava says, wait a minute. You've only gone halfway around the bases over here. Omar Rava, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda Kasha. You had a problem because Rabbi Yehuda contradicts himself. He's very machmir in the case of chametz, maybe you'll eat it, and he was very laid back in the case of chadash, and he allows you to be osek and cut it down, and you won't eat it. Fine. But the Rabbanan, lo kasha, This is what you call a rhetorical question. You didn't ask the question about the Rabbanon on the Rabbanon. In the case of Chametz, the Rabbanon are very laid back about it. They're not worried that you'll come to eat it. And in the case of Chadosh, as we saw at the top of this Amud, Lo Baratz and Chachamim, they would not allow you to get yourself involved with Chadosh because you might come to eat it. So the answer is the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda, Lo Kasha, Kiddush Hanina. We've already answered the question about the apparent contradiction, Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbanon, the Rabbanon, Nami Lo Kasha. There's no question, and we can justify why the Rabbanon are very laid back about Bedikas Chametz. They're not afraid you'll eat the Chametz. Why? And here's the famous statement: Hu Atzmo Machazer Olav L'Sorfo is Meichel Ka'achil Minei. The whole purpose of Bedikas Chametz is to look for that Chametz, enemy number one, so that you can destroy the Chametz. Now you're going to tell me he's going to eat it? His whole mental preoccupation in Bedika is, let me get rid of this Chametz. It's terrible. It's Chametz. And now you're going to tell me he's going to come to eat it? Rabbi Yehuda is talking about some sort of a shogeg. You know, the man gets distracted and he forgets that he's involved in destroying Chametz, and he sees the Chametz. It's a wonderful piece of Chametz. Again, if it's Kodem Shasi Suro, that's fine. Let him eat all the Chametz that he finds. It couldn't bother me one iota. But after Shasi Suro, he might just pop something into his mouth. Rav Ashi Omar, he wants to come up with a substitute answer. The Rav Yehuda, the Rav Yehuda Lo Kasha. So let's go back to the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Yudam and Beis. That's the Mishnah Rishona. And the Mishnah there says, Kemach V'Koli. Says Rav Ashi, you know why Rabbi Yehuda is laid back about Chadosh? Because it's Kemach V'Koli. And in the cases of Kemach V'Koli, he doesn't eat it. When was the last time you ate flour? Now, I have a problem with this. This is my own problem, because the Gemara says in Masechta Brachos that if you eat flour, it's a machlokas, what bracha you make on it? Do you make a bar pri adama, or do you make a shakal di abidvara? But both opinions say that you might eat kemach. I mean, I guess you have to be pretty desperate to eat kemach, and you should probably drink it down with a lot of liquids because it's very dry. But here the Gemara is assuming who would eat kemach. Again, somebody who's very, very desperate might eat kemach. The problem is that it also mentions koli. Koli is dried cereals. You know, that should be edible. So the Gemara assumes here that when you dry the cereal, it's not edible in its shape. You're going to have to add some sort of liquid. But the funny thing is, and here's the paradox, that you might eat grains in the period of time, in that slice of time between the harvesting of the grains and the converting the grains into kemach or kol. You follow what I'm saying? There's time T1, which we call ktsira, and then there's time T3 when it became kemach or koli. It was either ground to make flour or what? It was dried in the oven. Dried in the oven. But in between time T1 and time T3, the Gemara assumes that you really could pop your grains into your mouth. Why? Because at this point it's soft. And as long as it's soft, maybe you suck on it. I don't know exactly what you do with it. I never ate grains, but you know, sometimes you go out on a tiyul and they tell you, you know, take a, you know, grab a grain or something, you know, those sheaves, you know, and suck on it. I don't know. So therefore the Gemara attacks Rav Ashi. And the Gemara says, Hadir Avashi Bedusahi. Bedusa means it's an incorrect transmission. It's impossible to attribute that statement to Ravashi. We have to reject it. There's a mistake here. Because Hatenach mi Koli Vielach. It's okay once you get to the state of Kemach or Koli. At that point, it's not edible as is. But Meikara, what about before it became Kemach or Koli? Ad Koli Maikala Meimar. At that point, it's still soft, and he might come to eat it. Or the chitem al yedei kituv. Maybe you're going to answer that we're not going to allow you in that Mishnah, the first Mishnah Rishona, to harvest your produce with a sickle. We're only going to allow you to pluck it out by hand. Kidarava, again, the girs of Rava. But then we're going to be stuck with the second Mishnah. The whole reason why we rejected Rava of Shinui is because the second Mishnah, Lekotzim Beis HaShalch Shabbat Mokim, Vukimna Kareb Yehuda, we have that second Mishnah which allowed you to cut down, to harvest the Beis HaShlochin and the Beis HaMokim, and we say that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of that Mishnah, Mai Ikal Meimar. What are you going to say in that case? Here, the Mishnah tells you explicitly that you're allowed to cut it down, meaning with a sickle, the normal way you do it. And that's, in fact, the reason why Abaye rejected Rava, because although Rava was giving us a very good reconciliation of Rabbi Yehuda in the first Mishnah, but it doesn't work out in the second Mishnah, because in the second Mishnah there's no Shinui. The Mishnah permits you to do Ktsira on Chadash. And the answer has to be Lo B'dilimine versus B'dilimine. Elad Rav Ashi bidusahi. It must be that Rav Ashi never really meant to say it. So Rav Osai, we're going to have to stop here, but let's make a note, because it's a long time until Sunday, of where we got up to. And the last word in the line is v'chol. And at this point, the Gemara is going to go into an entire analysis of the laws of Shabbos. In the laws of Shabbos, we have a lot of gzeros. We're afraid to allow you to create a situation where you might inadvertently violate the Shabbos. Like, for example, leaving food on an open fire if it's not fully cooked. Or, for example, setting up a system where the oil is in a receptacle and the oil is tipped over in such a way that it feeds the nair. Because once again, we're afraid that you might take away from the oil. All of a sudden you realize that you don't have oil for your table, and inadvertently you violate what's called Meleches Mavir. And now the Gemara is going to say the following. We're going to take Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanon. Rabbi Yehuda is very nervous, and he imposes the Gzeira in the case of Bedikas Chametz Lachash Asisuro. The Rabbanon are very lenient about it. And we're going to transpose that into the laws of Shabbos. And we're going to see that we have all sorts of problems over here. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is going to be very machmir. He's going to be very machmir in Chametz, but he's going to be very laid back in Shabbos. And the Rabbanon the opposite. They are laid back in the case of Chametz, but very machmir in the case of Shabbos. So that's going to be in Mirza Shev, the Sugya, for Yom Rishon. The only thing I didn't get a chance to accomplish today is this Tosis Aval. Also, we spoke about Chometz B'Shmei Korah. You remember whether he has to take a ladder and climb up and bring it down. So I didn't really get a chance to finish that discussion. So Blineta, maybe I'll try to fill that in on Yom Rishon. So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbos. If anyone wants to learn a little Hashkof on the Parsha at 10:40. Okay then? Have a good Shabbos, everyone. Okay, then?